Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the 88th episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Melissa. Welcome back to the dysfunction.
It is getting worse and worse.
It really is.
Yeah.
But here's something to brighten your day. I'm going to read some awesome things that happened to our listeners this week.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. I actually completely forgot about that.
I figured you did. That's okay. Christina Pickle, 68, says, firefighters came to our homeschool community to present. Christina, that would have brought a lot of joy to my day, too.
Because there, you would finally see like a handsome guy show up?
There's something about firefighters. Am I right, ladies?
What if I put on a firefighter outfit?
That would do it right there.
Really?
Absolutely. All right. All right. Tara Tweet says, I got a tattoo from Jordan Pundick from Newfound Glory. I had to look this up because I didn't know who that was. This is a band called Newfound Glory, a very popular band. I apologize for not being cool. And she got a tattoo from one of the guys in the band. That's awesome.
Just randomly? Like,
I don't know. It just says she got a tattoo from him.
She must know somebody who knows somebody.
That's pretty cool. And you know what? It's good for him to have a little side job because sometimes being in a band just doesn't work out. But Newfound Glory sounds like they worked out.
They're doing pretty good.
I think so. Yeah.
Are they here? Are they in another country?
I think they're here. Now you're asking me very hard questions.
Sorry. Okay, never mind.
Okay, well, MJM Charles says they got to watch a baby duck hatch.
Aww.
That's really cool. Kelsey from Encore Therapy said, we had a baby.
Oh, that's good. Congratulations.
She had a
that's
baby.
Awesome.
She had her second boy.
Aww.
And that's really awesome. And I love following her. So go follow Encore Therapy. It's pretty cool. And then Mrs. Storer 2017 says, my mom miraculously lived. I got a call last Friday that she wouldn't make it through the night.
Oh, God.
God bless you and God bless
and
your
she
mom.
She made it through the night.
She did. That's amazing.
Oh, my gosh. That's...
I'm really happy for you.
Yeah.
And then Bejeweled Ginger says, I start a new job on Monday as an HR director. I'll be listening to your podcast on the commute.
That's a lot of pressure.
Well, congratulations on your new job.
Yeah, that's super cool. Anything that you're a director of, no matter what, that means you've made it.
Yeah.
You have achieved the American dream if you have a director in your title.
And then our last one, Mrs. Dr. Cave, I think is what it is. She says, got our offer accepted on our first home.
Oh, awesome.
That is so cool. You guys, you had a great week, and it's really fun sharing that with you.
See, I actually do feel more positive now hearing all those.
See? I knew this would work.
As opposed to just negative, horrible stories.
Right.
Because there's the opposite of all those. Like, I just got a tattoo, and they misspelled what I wanted to do.
No regrets.
Yeah. No regrets.
All right, Daniel, you got some factoids for me or for us?
I does. Okay, this is from the Reader's Digest.
Ooh.
So if you're interested, go to Reader's Digest. So what I'm going to read is diseases, obscure, crazy diseases that people can get.
Oh, thank you for adding to my anxiety.
Yeah, this will help you out. This will actually make you, if you don't have any of these, I hope no one has these because these are crazy. So this will make you feel better about yourself, right? So we're uplifting by telling you how horrible other people have it. See? So there you go. I'm just going to go in order. Is that cool?
Perfect.
This disease makes you believe that you're dead. Says most of us realize zombies are in like science fiction. This disease is called Cotard's delusion. And people are convinced they are dead and rotting or at very least they're losing body parts. They often refuse to eat or bathe out of worry. For example, they don't have the digestive system to handle food, or that water will wash away fragile body parts. Research suggests Cotard's is caused by a failure in areas of the brain that recognize emotions, leading to feelings of detachment. Luckily, medication can often be used to treat it. Yeah. See? Do you feel better already?
Oh, my gosh. Well, no, I feel horrible for those people.
Somebody has that. Okay, but it's treatable. So that's, you know, that's something. Most of these are not treatable.
All right. Well, there's the treatable one.
Okay, this one's fascinating to me. This is a disease that causes you to speak with a foreign accent.
Like Madonna and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right, but you don't have any experience speaking in these other languages. So it's not another language, it's just an accent. Sufferers of foreign accent syndrome randomly wake up one day and begin speaking with a foreign accent. They say this condition is extremely rare and only 60 known cases exist.
Madonna is one of those.
Doctors originally thought the patients were delusional, but in 2002, scientists at Oxford University discovered that sufferers shared similar brain abnormalities that cause changes to their speech, pitch, and syllables. The syndrome can also be brought on by a head injury or stroke.
Or too much plastic surgery.
Or too much plastic surgery. Well, yeah, if you change the formation of your lips...
That doesn't cause an accent, though.
No, but I mean, you could change the way you move your mouth and stuff, I suppose. I mean, because that's what happens. If you have a stroke, you have a harder time talking and you have to relearn how to talk and all that stuff.
Right.
This disease, this is fun for you or anyone else. This disease makes you allergic to water.
Oh, no.
You are actually become allergic to water. So we take showers, swim, you know, got a pool going, all that stuff. For people with aquagenic urticaria, casual contact with water causes them to break out in hives. Only 30 people have ever been diagnosed with this.
I feel like I watched a documentary about a little kid.
I have too. Yeah.
Oh, my heart. Broken.
Most of these 30 people are women. Man, you guys always get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, we do. Thanks, Eve. Jeez.
Much remains unknown about this strange condition, including how to cure it. Sufferers often bathe in baking soda and cover their bodies with creams in order to cope. That's it. All right, here we go. This disease, it turns your urine purple.
Oh, that's cool.
Vincent van Gogh and the Mad King George III of England have one unusual thing in common. Both men's wild mood swings have been attributed by some theorists to porphyria, a rare disease in which the body fails to produce heme, H-E-M-E, a protein that helps carry oxygen. Substances called porphyrins build up to toxic levels in the liver and when released turn the color of urine and feces purple. Detractors of the theory prefer to attribute the wild mood swings to mental health conditions such as bipolar disorder. In the case of Van Gogh, who spent a good deal of his adult life hospitalized, there was no mention of this purple urine in doctors' reports or in his prolific and intimate letters to his brother Theo. All right, this is fun. This is for all you pregnant women out there. The disease that causes you to crave and eat paint and dirt.
Mm-hmm.
See, you already know.
Yeah.
People with pica, is it pica or pica, P-I-C-A syndrome, are not picky eaters. Sufferers crave and ingest unappetizing items, including paint, clay, chalk, soap, plaster, and dirt, as well as more edible raw goods like rice or flour. To be diagnosed with pica, cravings must be continuous for over a month. Symptoms are seen most commonly in pregnant women or children. Some suspect the syndrome is caused by a mineral deficiency, but experts do not agree on the cause or a cure. So there you go.
I've had friends that have craved laundry detergent.
What?
Dirt, like you said. But really, it's because you're low in iron.
So that's a mineral deficiency. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there
you go. I just craved Taco Bell.
That's just American
when I stopped syndrome.
Yeah. This one's fascinating. I always say that.
That's next your favorite word, is fascinating.
It is fascinating. Okay, well, you tell me if this isn't fascinating.
Okay.
This disease makes you feel like you are shrinking.
I've had that.
I have too.
When you lay in bed, it's called like Alice in Wonderland.
Stop. Let me get this out, woman. Jeez, you're always stealing my thunder. You can probably guess why this condition is named after Lewis Carroll's famous book, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Those with Alice in Wonderland syndrome feel themselves rapidly shrinking or expanding and often believe objects appear smaller than they actually are, according to the Oxford Handbook of Clinical Medicine. Research has linked the condition to migraine headaches.
Yes.
Coincidentally, Lewis Carroll himself suffered from severe migraine. Some believe his condition may have inspired many of the scenes in his book.
Oh, that's cool. Well, not that he had migraines, but that was an amazing book. But yes, sometimes before I get a migraine, I'll be laying in bed and I'll feel like I'm shrinking into the pillow.
Same thing. 100%. Yeah.
I bet most of our listeners have too.
I feel like I'm being swallowed by the pillow in the bed. All right. This disease causes you to age 7 times faster than normal.
I have it.
At the age of 1 or 2 years old, children with this condition begin to show signs of aging, such as slow growth and hair loss. This is depressing. Eventually, they lose most of their body fat and develop wrinkles, making them look decades older than their true age. Root cause, a rare genetic condition called progeria, which is derived from Greek. Everything derives from Greek. And means prematurely old. No cure has been discovered yet, and the average patient will pass away by the age of 14.
Ugh.
Yeah, see, now you feel better about yourself. Oh, see, can't blame all of your wrinkles and saggy skin and depression on that. Because you're 44.
Shut up. Piss off.
Tell me if you've ever gotten this. This disease plays loud exploding sounds in your head. Mm-mm. People who experience exploding head syndrome, that's a terrible name for it. Hey, what happened to Steve over there? I had exploding head syndrome.
Who named that?
Right? They claim to hear extremely loud sounds like gunfire or cymbals as they fall asleep or wake up when no one else around them hears a thing. There is no consensus as to why this occurs, but it is believed to be a sleep disorder brought on by stress or exhaustion. Although most sufferers will only hear the sound once or twice in their lifetimes, sometimes medication is necessary for those with recurring issues.
So it's not every single day.
No. This is the last one. Okay. Everyone will appreciate this. This disease makes your hair turn white almost overnight.
I might have that.
You can't have all these.
There's something wrong with me.
If your hair abruptly turns white as a result of stress or bad news, you might suffer from canitis sebita, also called Marie Antoinette syndrome. The condition was coined for Queen Marie Antoinette of France, whose hair reportedly turned white the night before her guillotining.
Or it was all the powder she put in her wig.
Could be. It's also said to have affected famous figures like Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin.
Oh, yeah, stressful jobs.
Right? A number of factors could be to blame, including an autoimmune disorder that targets melanin, affecting pigment production. So there you go.
Have you ever seen the original Poltergeist?
Probably.
The mother in that, after she goes and saves her child in another dimension, part of her hair turned white.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Thank you, Steven Spielberg, for all of your talent and all the things you brought to our attention, including sharks.
Anyway, all right. Well, that's all I got for now, because otherwise we could just go on forever and you guys would go click.
Thank you, darling. This was amazing.
Sure.
Are you ready for my case?
Yes.
All right. This is the case of Drew and Stacy Peterson featuring Kathleen Savio.
That's very familiar sounding. I just can't picture with the whole Peterson saga thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
This isn't Scott Peterson. This is Drew Peterson.
Well, then I have no idea. Never mind. Forget it. Start. Let's go. Hurry up. Wrap it up.
In the early morning hours of October 29th, 2007, Cassandra Kales walked into the Illinois State Police Station to file a missing persons report. Cassandra had not heard from her sister, 23-year-old Stacy Ann Peterson, in over 24 hours. She had called and texted Stacy all day with no answer. That was incredibly out of character. Stacy always answered her phone or returned a text. Cassandra told the officer that earlier in the evening, she had decided to drive over to the home that Stacy shared with her husband of 4 years, 53-year-old Drew Peterson, and their four children. The youngest two were Stacy and Drew's children together, and the two oldest were Drew's from a previous marriage.
Okay.
What?
He's 53 and she's 23?
Yes.
And they have two kids together. Two from a prior for him, right?
Right.
And two with them.
Yes.
That means she, unless she was really fast, they started at 19 for her?
Ding, ding, ding.
Right? Yeah. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Good job, math
guy. This old ass man got this young girl. I say girl. Because even if it were me and a 19-year-old, the people would be like, that's weird.
Yes.
Oh, okay. God. All right.
We'll continue. Dive further into this.
All right. That's it. I'm getting it straight in my head.
As she pulled up to the house, Cassandra noticed that neither Drew's Denali, and there's some sources that say a Yukon.
It is a Yukon Denali. Denali is a package for the Yukon.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Okay.
No, you're not. I'm just weird, and I know everything about cars.
Nor was Stacy's Grand Prix parked in the driveway.
Pontiac.
Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
She knocked on the front door, and one of the oldest children answered. Cassandra asked if Stacy was home. Mom and Dad got in a fight, he said. Mom left, and Dad went looking for her. Cassandra left, and she decided it was time to call Drew. And to her surprise, he answered. He sounded out of breath, and she heard keys rattling in the background and some sort of ding, like when you open a car door. Remember when you'd open the car door and it'd go ding? Drew was in a panic and began telling Cassandra that Stacy had left him. She had taken her bikini, the deed to the house, and $25,000 in cash from the safe, and that she had been cheating on him. As Cassandra was telling the officer her situation, he realized that Drew's name sounded very familiar. Drew Peterson was a 29-year veteran of the Bolingbrook Police Department.
Oh, boy.
Drew had held many positions in this department, everything from an evidence technician to a member of the SWAT team. He had even worked undercover for the Joliet Area Narcotics Unit. But was let go because he had provided information to an outlaw biker gang. So Drew did not have a very good reputation with the state police.
Okay, can I say two things?
Yes.
So when I hear Joliet, that's where the Blues Brothers got out of, right?
They did.
And then John Belushi got out. And then Dan Aykroyd picks him up in the used cop car. And he goes, yeah, I just got out of Joliet. Sorry, that's obscure. But that's all I think of when I hear Joliet, which is in Illinois. Okay.
Okay.
Carry on.
Yep. After filing the missing persons report, Cassandra drove back over to the Peterson home with a friend named Bruce. To her surprise, as she approached the house, she saw both cars were parked in the driveway. Cassandra called Drew on speakerphone. Bruce asked him, where's Stacy? Drew tells him that she wasn't there and that she had left him. Bruce then asked, why is her car here? Drew then says that Stacy left the car in the Clow Airport parking lot and left with her boyfriend, and that he had to walk the half a mile to the small regional airport to get it and then drove it back home. But nothing is adding up. This just isn't adding up.
That doesn't make sense at all.
Stacy would never have left without telling her family, nor would she have ever left her children. She was a devoted mother to those four children. Her world completely revolved around these kids.
Not to mention she's only 23.
Right.
So it's not like she's super confident in her ability to just walk out. You know what
she
I mean?
She was an old 23, though. She was an old soul.
Okay. No, I get that because she started young.
Right.
But still.
But she was completely devoted to these children.
Yeah, that's very unlikely. But
so where was Stacy? Cassandra felt like Drew had something to do with her sister's disappearance. Drew and Stacy were married on October 18th, 2003, a couple months after the birth of their first child.
Oh.
And 8 days after the finalization of Drew's divorce from his third wife. Drew was 49 and Stacy was 19.
There it is.
The couple met in 2001 while Drew was working as a night commander. His partner was dating a co-worker of Stacy's at a local Spring Hill Suites hotel. Stacy was only 17 years old.
Oh, God.
The two hit it off and began dating, keeping it a secret only from Drew's third wife. Stacy even sneaking into the basement of Drew's home so the couple could sleep together.
Okay, so he started adult aerobics with her at 17.
Yes.
And he's 47.
Yeah, he's 30 years older than her.
Yeah.
He could be her father.
100%.
Yes.
Easily.
Because of the age difference, the Bolingbrook Police Department checked with the Will County State Attorney's Office to make sure the relationship was legal. No laws were being broken, and they continued dating. The Illinois age of consent is 17.
Oh, boy.
So this wasn't a secret to anybody but Drew's third wife. The relationship became serious really quickly. This was almost an infatuation. Drew loved that she was young, fun, and beautiful. And according to him, he had an overwhelming need to take care of her.
Yeah, because he's basically her father.
Stacy liked that Drew was older, stable, and could give her the life she had always wanted. Quote unquote, the father she never had.
Well, who would want a father that sleeps with you?
Yeah, gross. She's basically banging her dad?
Well, because that's the father she never had. Well, yeah, because who would want to have a father that you're having sex with?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
I mean, I guess it's convenient. Keep it all under the same roof.
Daniel.
I'm joking.
I know you are.
But that's weird.
Like bile in the back of my throat. Okay. He bought a house for them to live in, a car for her to drive, and took Stacy on trips to tropical locations. He has 6 kids altogether. Okay? Sure. According to one of his oldest sons, they were a good match, even though she was only 4 years younger than him.
So she could have hooked up with one of his kids.
Yes.
And that would have been more comparable in age.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fair.
Stacy grew up relatively poor, and before she was born, her family had lost everything in a house fire, including a young daughter.
Oh, God.
When Stacy was very young, she had a baby sister that had died from SIDS. So this poor girl had a very traumatic childhood.
Right.
One day in 1998, when Stacy was 15 years old, her mother grabbed her Bible and said she was going to church. She was never seen again. Her mom seemingly vanished without a trace.
That's bizarre.
After that, the family moved around a lot. After high school, Stacy began attending Joliet Community College. She wanted to become a nurse to help people. But soon after, she met old man Drew, and he swept her off her feet. Even though there was a rather large age gap, 30 years, the couple seemed to have a lot of fun together, always laughing, keeping active, and raising children. But after a few years, Stacy began telling family and friends that she wanted to leave Drew, saying that he was controlling and mean, called her names, and nothing she did ever satisfied him. She was never good enough. Drew even paid for Stacy to get her teeth straightened, new boobs, and a tummy tuck. She also believed that the house and her phone were bugged.
So he's kind of a bit of a controlling creeper.
Ding, ding. Yes.
Okay, so it would be like me in, how old am I? 44.
Mm-hmm.
3 years from now, having divorced you,
mm-hmm.
and I start up a relationship with a 17-year-old girl.
With someone our kid's age.
One of our kid's friends. Like a junior in high school.
I would take you for everything you were worth, FYI.
Okay, so, but he's already been divorced 3 times. How does he have anything left? Right? I mean, after three marriages, you're wiped out. Of course, this is Illinois, not California. California, guys, you're going to be wiped out. There's nothing left. You're one of the people living on the street.
Well, Stacy even told Cassandra 2 days before she disappeared that she was asking Drew for a divorce within weeks. Drew was interviewed by police the day after the missing persons report was filed. He told them that he had worked the midnight shift on Saturday the 27th. Drew said he had returned home the morning of Sunday the 28th between 5 and 6 a.m. He and Stacy chatted and he went to bed. The children woke him up around 10 a.m. and Stacy was not there. Drew assumed that she had left to go help her brother paint his house and would be home later. Drew took care of the kids and ran some errands, even calling into the station and taking a personal day instead of working his late shift that he was supposed to be working that night. The last time he had spoken to Stacy was when she had called him to say that she was leaving him and that her car was at the airport. That was around 9 p.m. And that was it. That was the last time he heard from her. Officers then asked if they could look around the home. Drew said yes, and nothing looked out of the ordinary. No signs of a struggle or blood. Cadaver dogs were even brought in, and they found nothing to indicate that there had ever been a dead body within that home.
Hmm.
They then asked to search the cars. Drew only gave them permission to search his car, the Denali.
Okay.
Immediately, the community of Bolingbrook began searching for Stacy, searching fields and abandoned areas, divers searching ponds and canals, passing out flyers, holding vigils, and friends and family sharing their concern with local media.
Why would you not think that the car that she might have left in is extremely important to search? Because there might be something in it. There might be some evidence. There might be a hair in there that doesn't belong to her or the hell's his name?
Drew.
She or Drew. So then you'd be like, oh, there's another guy in here or something like that, right?
Yes, that's why it was so suspicious that he wouldn't let them search her car.
But I wouldn't go forward with a search party if he won't even let me search her car.
No, but it was the community.
No, I get that.
And her family rallying around and trying to find her. And then within a couple days, the story of the young and beautiful missing mother was making headlines nationally. Like, this blew up. Stacy's disappearance became huge news around the country. Stacy's story was very reminiscent of another missing woman's case, that of Lacey Peterson, who disappeared on Christmas Eve in 2002. And their youngest daughter, Drew and Stacy, their youngest daughter's name is Lacey.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah. They're not related, right?
No, not related at all.
Just pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence.
Okay.
The one person in Stacy's life that refused to search for her was, of course, Drew.
That is extremely bizarre.
He continued to tell all those that would listen that she left on her own free will and that she was right where she wanted to be. That searchers were looking for a body that wasn't there, because Stacy wasn't there, because Stacy had left him and the children.
Okay. If you left me and I had to walk to the airport to get your car and bring it back,
mm-hmm.
and had all these damn kids to deal with, I would be pissed. Hell yeah, I'd want to find out where you are, right? Jessica would be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No, you don't get to run off with a boyfriend, even though, you know, whatever. I'd be pretty pissed. I'd be wanting to find you also. I'd be like, mm-hmm. oh, no, you come back here and do so. We got to figure this out because,
Well, Drew did go on local and national television shows asking Stacy to return, if only to clear his name and the suspicion surrounding him. And he did eventually offer $25,000 to anybody who had any information leading to finding Stacy so that she could clear his name.
Okay, if I somehow got rid of you, right? In an illegal way. I would immediately offer just a ridiculous amount of money for any information finding you, because then it takes the spotlight off of me.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, oh my gosh, I will put up $100,000 for information to bring back my lovely Melissa.
Drew did tell investigators that Stacy was having an affair with a guy she had known from high school named Scott.
Because she's still in high school.
After racy texts were discovered between Stacy and Scott, he was brought in for questioning. According to Scott, the relationship never went past platonic and some innocent flirting. Scott told investigators that Stacy had told him that she wanted a divorce. After the two were married, Drew began telling Stacy that she was not pretty enough and not good enough for him. This is what she's telling Scott.
Unless she is just a ugly tub with a wart on the end of her nose with hair sticking out of it, how could she not be good enough for this old, crinkly-ass man?
Yes, and I'll show you pictures.
Oh, good.
Because he was old, crinkly, old man. And she was a beautiful young woman.
What the hell?
Scott had an interesting story about the one and only time he'd ever met Drew. Scott and Stacy had met at a local diner for dinner one night. He noticed a patrol car circling the restaurant. Eventually, the car stopped and a cop got out. It was Drew. He came in the restaurant and sat down in the booth next to Scott and just stared at him. The situation became tense, and Drew asked him for his driver's license. Scott gave it to him. Drew looked it over and then got up and left the restaurant.
Oh, he's got issues.
A couple days after Stacy's disappearance, investigators learned that Drew's stepbrother, 40-year-old Tommy, was in the hospital after trying to take his own life with a drug overdose, and that he had some important information about Stacy. Tommy told investigators that on the night of October 28th, Drew had called him and said he needed his help and would pick him up. Tommy was drunk, so Drew took him through Starbucks to get a coffee. Drew then took him to a park, some sources say a coffee shop, and gave Tommy a cell phone. He told him to wait there, and if the phone rang, not to answer it. Drew then drove away. Around 9 p.m., the phone rang and the caller ID read Stacy. But Tommy never answered it because he listened to what his brother wanted him to do. A short time later, Drew returned and told his brother that he needed his help moving something heavy from inside his house into his SUV. When they arrived at the home, Tommy followed Drew up the stairs and into the bedroom. What Drew needed help moving was a large blue industrial barrel. In some of the reports I read, they said it was a 4-foot-long blue bin.
Yeah.
So it goes back and forth between a barrel and a bin.
Yeah.
Okay. Tommy admitted to investigators that while he was helping to move the large object, he had a feeling that Stacy was inside. They asked him why he thought that, and he said because the barrel was warm to the touch.
What?
The two men got the barrel, or bin, depending on what you read, into the back of the Denali, and Drew drove Tommy home. And 2 days later, distraught over what he believed he had done, Tommy drank heavily and tried to commit suicide by taking a ton of pills. When Tommy's statement became publicized, Drew made the media circuit and said that Tommy had a history of drug and alcohol abuse and that he suffered from mental illness. But a few days before Stacy went missing, her sister Cassandra saw a large blue barrel in the Petersons' garage. It seemed so out of place that she asked Stacy about it. Stacy told her she believed it was chlorine or something for the pool that Drew had recently purchased.
Okay, I just purchased a bucket of chlorine tablets. By the way, it's really freaking expensive. Chlorine's expensive. That is like a 3-gallon bucket. Small, right? Like, or right. five-gallon bucket. You know, like something you'd wash your car with. What he's talking about is a big-ass drum.
A huge industrial barrel.
Unless you own a resort right? With like a giant pool and a lazy river. You don't need an industrial sized drum for anything related to your pool. And I got the biggest, exactly, the biggest bucket of chlorine you can buy.
That's what I was thinking too.
No, there's no reason for that.
Remember that coffee that Drew had bought for Tommy? Mm-hmm. That Starbucks coffee? Well, investigators went to that Starbucks and found the video footage of Drew and Tommy in the drive-thru at the time and day that Tommy said he helped move the barrel. And the only coffee purchased that day with vanilla flavoring in it was at that time.
Oh, okay.
So Tommy was really telling the truth.
Right, right.
About what had happened. Volunteers spent weeks searching for a blue barrel or a blue bin in the ponds and canals in the outlying areas, but none were ever found. And each time Tommy has been interviewed, his timeline of events has never changed. Not once.
Hmm.
He was even put into protective custody for 6 months after coming forward. Investigators believe that Drew was trying to set up Scott, the friend from high school,
right,
for Stacy's disappearance, because that cell phone that Tommy was holding in the park was Drew's cell phone. They believe that Drew drove out to the area where Scott lived and that Drew called his own phone from Stacy's phone so it would ping off a tower in Scott's neighborhood, leading the police to believe that Stacy was with Scott when Drew says she called him at 9 p.m. on the night of the 28th to tell him that she was leaving the marriage. The phone records show that Stacy's phone did ping off a tower in Scott's neighborhood at that time.
In other words, this was premeditated activity.
That part of it was.
Right.
He had thought it out.
Mm-hmm.
Drew's cell phone pinged later that evening in the area of 135th and Route 53. Where a bridge crosses a canal, an extremely toxic area environmentally, a good area to dump a body.
That's kind of obscure that it's called an extremely toxic area environmentally.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
I guess just a lot of trash and things being dumped over this bridge into this canal.
A lot of barrels.
Well, no, because they didn't find any blue barrels or blue bins ever.
Hmm.
Divers were in that area for weeks and never found a blue barrel or bin, and no human remains. On November 9th, Stacy's case went from a missing person to potential homicide, and her husband, Drew Peterson, was the prime suspect. I think most of us are in agreement that if Tommy is telling the truth, then Drew had something to do with Stacy's disappearance, right?
Logically, yeah.
Logically.
Yeah.
But without a body or any physical evidence, could they get a conviction?
Probably not.
No.
Not if he had a good defense team.
Because if they took this case to trial and lost, and then Stacy's remains were found, they couldn't retry Drew. That's double jeopardy.
Oh.
And no prosecutor would risk that. But what if there was another way to nail Drew? What if there was another woman from Drew's past who didn't disappear? What if this woman died under suspicious circumstances?
What?
Whispers began circulating throughout the community of Bolingbrook. Those whispers eventually found their way to James Glasgow, the state's attorney for Will County. Turned out, Drew had been questioned before Stacy's disappearance in the accidental death of one of his former wives.
Oh.
James pulled the file and began combing through it. Had the death of Drew's third wife, Kathleen Savio, really been just a tragic accident, or was the evidence and town gossip leading in another direction? A direction of murder.
Yes.
On Monday, March 1st, 2004, a little before 11 p.m., in the suburban area of Bolingbrook, Illinois, a call came into the local 911 call center. Concerned neighbors had found the body of Kathleen Savio in her home, in the upstairs bathroom, lying in the bathtub, dead. She was naked, and there was a blood streak running from her head and down into the empty tub. Her ex-husband of only 5 months, 53-year-old Drew Peterson, had come to Kathleen's home to return their two children after his weekend visitation. Kathleen had not answered the door, nor was she responding to the multiple telephone calls he had made. Becoming concerned, Drew made his way over to the neighbors' homes, checking to see if they had seen or heard from Kathleen. They responded no. They had not seen her. A locksmith was called and the front door was opened. Drew thought it best not to enter Kathleen's home since their divorce financial settlement was still ongoing and the relationship was tumultuous at best. The two neighbors cautiously entered the home and eventually made their way upstairs, finding Kathleen. After one of the neighbors screamed, Drew ran into the house and up the stairs into the bathroom. He knelt down and checked Kathleen's pulse. She was gone. According to the neighbors, Drew said, "What am I going to tell my kids?"
That's a good question.
Officers and first responders were on the scene quickly. As EMTs entered the bathroom, Drew was heard saying, "This is my ex-wife. Treat the scene with respect."
Sure.
After surveying the area, the crime scene investigator believed that Kathleen's death was caused by an accidental fall. Her hair was wet, her fingers were pruny, and she had a 1-inch gash on the back of her head. She must have fallen while getting in or possibly out of the bathtub. So the scene was never processed as a crime scene or secured. Photos were taken. The neighbors and Drew were questioned, along with Stacy Peterson. She was also questioned.
Oh.
Stacy told investigators in the presence of Drew that they had spent Saturday with the children at the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. And the only time Drew had not been with her was when he had left on Sunday morning to get donuts for the kids.
Okay.
Kathleen's body was taken to the local coroner, and her manner of death was ruled accidental, and the cause of death was drowning. She was buried, and Drew and Stacy now had full custody of the two children that he and Kathleen shared. Stacy even adopted the children, and life went on.
Wow.
But something wasn't sitting right with James Glasgow, especially when he began digging into the case file. He found a Polaroid photo of Kathleen in that tub. Now, I did find this photo in its entirety, and to me, it feels very off.
Okay.
For one thing, the bathtub is a small cookie-cutter garden-style tub, and there was no water in it, but the drain was closed. So it was like our tub, just kind of, it's not very deep.
Right.
It's not very big.
Right.
It's meant to look like it is expensive, but they're actually just really cheap.
Right.
A slow leaking drain was blamed for the lack of water in that tub. Kathleen was in a semi-fetal position on her left side. Her face was down and appeared to have been kind of jammed in this tub. Her toes were curled upward along the bottom edge of the basin. So, you know, when you kind of shove something in and the toes are
right.
Kind of curled a little bit. They weren't curled in, they were curled up.
Okay.
Her hair was wet and matted with blood in the back, and a trail of blood can be seen running from where the wound on the back of her head had bled, leading down towards the drain. So it hadn't made it all the way to the drain. It was kind of halfway there,
right,
which
means
she wasn't bleeding heavily at that point.
Right.
Other than that, there was no other blood in this tub. Not even a ring or a stain. If she had hit her head and was bleeding while submerged in the water and drowning, there would have been blood in that water.
Sure.
And as it drained, it would likely leave a blood residue on the sides of the white tub.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Most of us have had kids or ourselves been like really muddy and dirty. Mm-hmm. And then you take a bath, and as that water is going down the drain, you can see the remnants of the dirt around the tub.
Yeah, basically it's nasty.
Yeah, that would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
The shampoo bottles and other elixirs were undisturbed. So James began interviewing other witnesses. According to one of the neighbors that had found Kathleen, She said it was strange that Kathleen's hair was wet and down. Usually when a woman takes a bath, she puts her hair up. She also noticed that Kathleen had her dainty necklace on that she wore all the time. She said that Kathleen would take that off and the rest of her jewelry when she bathed.
Okay.
Now, I don't really know how she knows this, but yeah, she's really good friends with Kathleen, okay. So she felt like she knew how Kathleen would take a bath.
Okay.
She also noticed that there wasn't a towel, a robe, or even clothes in the bathroom.
Okay.
Now, as a woman, you have everything ready to go when you take a bath. Because especially if you have kids or anything like that, you never know what's about to happen. Okay. So you need to be able to grab something to put on.
Right, right.
Kathleen's nails were also cut very short, but she had always had long natural nails. That was her style.
Huh.
Family and friends of Kathleen's were interviewed. They had their suspicions as well. How did a healthy 40-year-old with no medical conditions fall in the bathtub and drown? Does that really happen? James started asking about Kathleen's marriage to Drew. Drew and Kathleen were married on May 3rd, 1992, after 6 months of dating. The two had been set up on a blind date, and sparks flew. There was only one problem, though. Drew was still married to his second wife.
He likes to overlap, huh?
He's an overlapper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kathleen had no idea that Drew was married, and when she found out, she was pissed. Like, she was not the type of girl to be a mistress. She wasn't.
So why didn't she just walk out then?
Because Drew told her that the marriage had been over for a while and that his second wife was a horrible person.
Oh, my God. And, of course, all these women are like, oh, so that means I'm much better.
Probably.
Jeez.
And that they just haven't filled out the paperwork yet. So they were basically divorced. They just didn't have paperwork. Kathleen believed him, and they were married soon after the divorce was finalized. Drew was 38 and Kathleen was 29.
Hmm.
It was considered a whirlwind romance. And Drew had this like Romeo persona is what they were calling it.
Sure.
He just knew all the right things to say to woo these women. These really great women.
Yeah.
Kathleen is described as ambitious, kind, outgoing, strong-willed, and very family-oriented. She did not take crap from anybody. She was just the life of the party, and she was beautiful with big brown eyes and long dark hair.
Cool.
She looked really fun.
Yeah.
She and Drew had two boys, but after the second son's arrival, their marriage began to sour. Drew started trying to control Kathleen, calling her names, and the two would get into some knock-down, drag-out arguments, flipping tables and knocking over cabinets. But they stayed together. These two sounded like they were very volatile and that Drew was constantly trying to control her. And she was like, no.
Yeah.
You married the wrong chick if you want to control somebody.
Right.
Family members and close friends said they had seen bruises on Kathleen over the years and believed that Drew had physically abused Kathleen on more than one occasion. Kathleen telling her family that Drew had threatened to kill her and make it look like an accident on multiple occasions.
Oh, my gosh.
So this marriage went from okay to really, really bad, really fast. In October of 2001, an anonymous letter was mailed to Kathleen. In the letter, the author wrote that her husband of almost 10 years was cheating on her with a 17-year-old named Stacy Kale, that Kathleen was the laughingstock of Bolingbroke, and that the entire department knew what Drew had been up to. Stacy even sneaking into the home's basement to sleep with Drew while Kathleen and the children were asleep upstairs.
Oh, wow. That had to piss her off.
Oh, she was so mad.
How come she didn't kill him? I mean.
I know.
I know. If I were sitting on a jury and found that out, I'd be like, no, guys. This is a tough one because I think he kind of deserved it.
Kathleen confronted Drew, and he admitted to the affair. The couple separated. Drew moved out of the home and bought a house a block and a half away with his girlfriend, Stacy.
How does he have so much damn money that he can pull all this off? See, I think he's a crooked cop.
I think so too.
100%.
I agree.
Cops don't make enough money. They really don't. I don't care how much they make. It's not enough. So where is he able to pull all this off?
That's a great question. And I do not have the answer for that, but I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, no, I'm convinced he's a crooked cop.
Kathleen even asked him why he had purchased a house so close to hers. Drew answered, "So I can watch you."
Oh, God.
Kathleen, right. Kathleen felt like Drew and Stacy were trying to flaunt their new relationship in front of her. They would do things like rollerblade past her house.
What?
And I'm sure like giggle and hee-hee. "We're so in love. Let me kiss you, you old man."
That is bizarre.
The separation was extremely bitter and tumultuous. On March 11, 2002, Kathleen filed for an emergency order of protection against Drew. He had threatened her over the phone. In the report, she wrote that he wanted her dead and that he told her he would burn down the house to shut her up. 4 months later, Kathleen told police that Drew had broken into her home, dressed in all black, and held her hostage with a knife for over 4 hours. Of course, Drew denied it. And from 2002 to 2004, the police were called out to Kathleen's home 18 times for everything from drop-off issues to violence allegations. And Kathleen documented everything, even talking to local police and reporters multiple times, but no one would listen or help her.
Oh, God.
And she kept it all in the suitcase. Everything. She wrote down everything. Wow. During this time, Stacy got pregnant. Unable to come to a financial agreement, Kathleen agreed to divorce Drew in the understanding that the financial part of the divorce would be settled at a later date. This is referred to as the bifurcated agreement.
Huh.
Which means you're divorced on paper, but not everything has been settled yet.
Right.
Drew and Kathleen's divorce was finalized on October 10th, 2003. Drew and Stacy were married 8 days later, a couple months after the birth of their first child.
So he was banging Stacy and got her pregnant, all while he's still legally married.
Yes, and going through this crazy separation with Kathleen.
Wow. And going to work and doing his normal job. I mean, all this is going on. And he has all the kids with the prior.
He's got two from his first wife, two from Kathleen, and one right now with Stacy. And according to everybody, even Stacy's family, he was a really good dad. They can't hold anything over him that has to do with the kids because he was a really good dad.
How did he have so much time to do all this stuff?
Maybe he had an extra hour every day.
He must have. I don't know how he could do this.
Well, on November 9th, less than 2 weeks after Stacy had vanished, a petition was filed listing the reasons authorities wanted to exhume and re-examine the body of Kathleen. Prosecutors said a review of evidence in the case is, quote unquote, consistent with the staging of an accident to conceal a homicide. The one-inch gash in the back of Kathleen's head did not render her unconscious, which would have been necessary for her to accidentally drown in the bathtub.
Hmm.
4 days later, Kathleen's white casket was removed from its plot at the Queen of Heaven Catholic Cemetery west of Chicago. On February 21st, 2008, the new autopsy stated that the cause of death of Kathleen Savio was drowning. And the matter of death was homicide.
Huh.
There were 16 areas of her body that showed injuries, not consistent with a fall, and that there was recent bruising on both sides of her body. Both sides, but she was laying on her left side when they found her. On May 7th, 2009, Drew Peterson was arrested and charged with the first-degree murder of his third wife, Kathleen Savio. More than 5 years after she had died and a year and a half since Stacy Peterson vanished.
Is he still a cop at this point?
No, he had turned in his resignation.
Oh, okay.
At this time. All right. They asked him to resign.
Right.
Okay. But there was still a significant lack of physical evidence linking Drew to Kathleen's murder. All the prosecution really had was hearsay evidence. Now, hearsay evidence in a legal forum is an out-of-court statement which is being offered in court for the truth of what was asserted. In most courts, hearsay evidence is inadmissible unless an exception to the hearsay rule applies, meaning all the witnesses heard from Kathleen or Stacy, but there's nobody around to corroborate that.
Gotcha.
So it's hearsay. They're saying what these two victims told them. So they could be making it up.
But there's a pattern of consistent
hearsay
evidence.
Yes. It's not just one person. It's multiple people.
Right.
During the pretrial hearings, judges granted the prosecution the use of hearsay. They now felt like they had a provable case.
Hmm.
The defense was also granted a win. During the trial, there was to be no mention that Drew's fourth wife, Stacy, had disappeared. So the jury never knew, technically, that Stacy was gone. But they didn't have a change of venue. So I'm sure most of these jury members knew something had happened.
Right.
But they weren't going to hear about it.
The jury was like, hey, I know you all know that his fourth wife is gone and he probably killed her, but just keep that out of your mind for now.
Right. Yes. The trial began on July 31st, 2012. In the prosecution's opening statements, they said that Kathleen had been a victim of Drew Peterson, and that he was a very dangerous man and a murderer, that Drew had killed Kathleen over money. The former spouses were in the final stages of the financial agreement within their divorce settlement. They were dividing assets and property. Kathleen was going to get the house valued at over $300,000, half of other marital properties, including a bar they had purchased while married.
What?
All combined, it was valued at more than $600,000. Plus, she was going to get half of Drew's pension.
Yep.
Drew killed Kathleen because he was facing financial devastation and wanted to prevent her from getting half his money and full custody of the boys. Kathleen also had a life insurance policy worth over $1 million. Her two sons were the beneficiaries.
Okay.
So if she died, Drew got full custody of those boys, plus he would have their $1 million.
Yeah, except he couldn't take possession of the money.
He couldn't take possession of the money, but it would go towards raising those boys.
That's true.
So he could say, oh, the boys really wanted to go to Disney World, so we're going to use their money
World. Yeah, it wouldn't take much to manipulate the kids into pissing that money away.
Exactly.
Yeah. God.
Kathleen's second autopsy was discussed by the medical examiner. Kathleen had a 1-inch laceration on the posterior scalp. In order to make such a deep gash, she would have needed to hit a hard, sharp edge. But the bathtub had smooth contours and rounded edges, which were inconsistent with the wound. Now, none of the photos taken of the bathtub after Kathleen was removed show any transfer of blood, tissue, or hair anywhere on this tub, not even on the spout or anything. So what part of the tub did she hit? Nobody knows.
Yeah, that would take a lot.
Her diaphragm had a significant bruise. She also had deep bruising on both chest muscles and bruising around her hip area and abrasions on her knees. So she just had a lot more injuries than what was reported initially. The state's theory was that Drew attacked Kathleen in her home unexpectedly, hitting her in the head with a hard object, such as a police baton. Drew then carried her into the bathroom from behind in some sort of bear hug.
Yeah.
So he was able to push Kathleen's face into the toilet, which would explain the deep bruises on her chest. He drowned her in that toilet water.
Oh, my God.
Drew removed all of her clothing, stuffed her body in that bathtub, and then filled it with water, not realizing that the tub had a slow leak when it was plugged. He then tidied up the scene and left.
And of course, he would know how to set up a scene.
Absolutely, he would. The state called up to the stand Pastor Neil Shorey. He was Drew and Stacy's pastor and marriage counselor. He would meet with them together and separately. Pastor Neil was trying to help the couple navigate some of their relationship issues, what he referred to as normal issues. In August of 2007, Stacy had asked him to meet her at a local Starbucks. She needed to talk to him about something. So Neil goes on to say that he never meets with the people that he's counseling alone.
That's smart.
One-on-one.
Yeah, that's
which
smart.
Is really, really smart.
Yeah.
Stacy was upset and crying. She began to describe what she had seen a few months before. One night, she woke up and Drew was not there. He was nowhere in the home. She called his cell phone and there was no answer. A couple hours later, she heard Drew in the house. She found him in the laundry room, dressed in all black, and taking items out of a duffel bag and putting them into the washing machine. Drew looked at her and walked out. Stacy opened the lid to the washing machine and saw women's clothing. Clothing that wasn't hers. This happened the night that it is believed Kathleen died.
Oh, wow.
Drew told Stacy that police would be at their door the next day and coached her for hours about what to say, creating an alibi. The next day, she heard that Kathleen had been found dead in her bathtub. Stacy knew that Drew had finally done it. He'd finally killed Kathleen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Pastor Shorey was able to talk about this incident that Stacy had told him, but he wasn't allowed to say that Stacy was now missing.
Oh my gosh.
Stacy admitted to the pastor that she had lied to the police and that she was terrified. The defense asked Pastor Neil why he had never gone to the authorities or told anyone else about what Stacy had said. He said that Stacy had told him not to, so he held on to the story.
That's weird.
It is weird. Wouldn't because you... he's not required by law
no.
to not share that information.
Wouldn't you immediately, when you find out this woman, this case is going on, wouldn't you immediately come forward and be like, I think I have some very serious information you need?
Yes, and because Stacy felt like she was in danger. So as a human being and as a pastor, you would think that he would say, you're getting out of there. I'm helping you get out of there. We're going to have people in the congregation help.
Right.
And we're taking you out of that situation because if what you're telling me is the truth and he killed his third wife, then he has no problem killing his fourth wife.
I would say, hey, right now we're going to go get I don't know what. Here's the thing, though. I'm trying to play devil's advocate on this.
I know.
Her husband is a police officer. Police are going to believe their own. Typically, not always, but typically. So he does kind of have an unfair advantage in the fact that he is the police officer. So it's her word against his.
I do believe that Drew had burned a lot of bridges. And I believe that if Stacy would have gone to the police, especially having all this information from Kathleen and all the times that she had called the police on Drew, I think at that time they would have believed Stacy. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Because Drew was going down and he was going down fast.
It's too bad she didn't reach in and grab one of those articles of clothing out of the wash.
Mm-hmm. And nobody knows what happened to
and
that
say,
clothing.
I have it. Oh, I'm sure he burned it or threw it away or, you know, whatever.
Probably.
After washing it, of course.
The defense team spent most of the trial trying to poke holes in all the hearsay evidence. They said that Kathleen had made everything up. She was mad that Drew left her for a newer model and that Kathleen was not a victim of domestic violence. It was theorized that Kathleen had taken some medication. This is the defense's theory.
Right, right.
Which none was ever found in her system, but okay. And had filled the tub with hot water, gotten in, and fallen asleep. She went to stand up but was groggy and slipped, hitting her head, falling into the water, and then drowning. This was a freak accident. Rare, but not impossible.
But this is a fairly, like you said, she's a fairly vibrant, fit,
yes,
lovely lady. No one goes and sits in a tub and just passes out and I mean,
unless you've taken a heavy medication.
But there's no evidence of any sort of medication. She wasn't on anything, I'm assuming, right? She wasn't prescribed anything.
She wasn't on anything at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston drowned in a bathtub, but that's also because she had taken a bunch of medication.
She had a history of
So it does happen.
Yeah.
But this doesn't make sense. This would not have happened to Kathleen.
Yeah. I know. I mean, okay. Yes, it's plausible. Of course.
Yeah, of course. It's plausible, but not likely.
No.
The defense never explained how she had gotten the gash on her head or from what part of the rounded tub. They tried to explain the bruising by calling to the stand Kathleen's boyfriend of 2 years. This big and beefy, like, gym guy, like this bro, said that 2 days before Kathleen was found in her tub, the two had engaged in rough adult aerobics in the style of the dog on the floor of the bedroom.
Okay.
Which would explain the abrasions from the carpet on her knees and the bruising around Kathleen's hips.
Yeah.
But according to the medical examiner, the bruising and abrasions were recent. They weren't a couple days old.
Hmm.
Now, the boyfriend does believe that Drew had something to do with her death, but he also said that they had done the deed rough.
Yeah, but did he leave bruises on her?
I don't know if that was a normal thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, did she, you know, wake up the next day and be like, oh my God, there's bruises from where you were squeezing me or something, right? I don't know.
Yeah, no, there wasn't any more said about that.
All right.
Now, you hope that as a prosecutor, you have that moment in court, that oh crap moment where the defense is brought to their knees. Well, this trial had one.
Oh, all right.
Kathleen's divorce attorney was contacted by Stacy a few days before Stacy had vanished. She told him that she was going to leave and divorce Drew. Stacy began asking him a series of questions. She asked if she was able to leave the state with all of the children because she had adopted the two other children.
Right.
So she wanted to leave and take the kids away.
Right.
So she wanted to know if she could do that, if she had the right to do that.
Yeah.
She also asked, quote unquote, can I get more money in the divorce if we go to the police and tell them how Drew killed Kathy? Not if Drew killed Kathy, but how Drew killed Kathy.
Ooh.
According to the defense, they couldn't come back after that.
No.
They couldn't poke holes in that because this was an attorney.
Right, right.
On September 5th, the case was handed over to the jury, and after 14 hours, they came back into the courtroom with a guilty verdict. And as they were reading the verdict, Drew was just glaring at the jurors.
Of course, because he's a giant steaming pile of crap.
At the sentencing hearing in February of 2013, Drew was allowed to address the court, and he was pissed. He was aggravated, threatening, and yelling at everyone, especially the prosecutor, James Glasgow, even screaming out, I did not kill Kathleen! I laugh every time I hear him say that.
Well, what else is he going to say? He's not going to say, all right, fine, I did it. Right. I mean, at this point, may as well hold out, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't kill her!
After his show was over, Drew Peterson was given 38 years in prison for the murder of Kathleen Savio.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, this isn't the end of the story.
No.
In August of 2014, James Glasgow received a letter from an inmate named Beast.
Stop. Are you serious?
I swear. Who was a friend of Drew's in prison.
Oh, I bet he was.
He claimed that Drew had offered him $10,000 to find someone to kill the prosecuting attorney. In November of that year, Beast wore a wire and got on tape Drew saying, go ahead and kill him. On February 9th, 2015, Drew was charged with attempted murder and solicitation to commit murder. At the trial, Beast was the key witness. He also said on the stand that Drew had admitted to killing his fourth wife, Stacy, and dumping her in Lake Michigan.
Damn.
Beast did not receive any leniency on his sentence. He had nothing to gain by coming forward. Actually, being a jailhouse snitch was very dangerous.
So they didn't give him anything?
They didn't give him anything. He did it all on his own.
Wow, that's kind of jacked up. I'd at least, like, you know, give him some extra
commissary
yard time, a bigger, I don't know.
Yeah, give him a couple $100 a month for
a nicer mattress, you know, a posturpedic mattress instead of whatever. I don't know.
Extra cigs.
Sure.
Drew was once again found guilty and had 40 more years in prison tacked onto his already 38 years in prison. So he got 78 years. So this piece of crap will die behind bars because he's an old
and then
oldie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then on top of all this, we still have Stacy, who still hasn't, they haven't proved what happened to her.
No, she's still missing. Her case is still open. But what they believe happened to Stacy is that when Drew got home that morning from work, she was probably texting that Scott guy because she has texts on her phone from early in that morning.
Right.
And that Drew saw the text and then strangled Stacy in their bedroom manually and then put her in that barrel or that bin.
Because he knew it was up, the gig was up.
You mean with Stacy?
Yeah.
Like her marriage?
Yeah,
marriage?
Like it's over. It's
he knew
over.
The marriage
and
was
she,
over.
And mm-hmm. she had seen through him at this point.
And nobody leaves Drew.
No, I
he
would imagine.
Them.
Yeah, I would imagine that did not go over well with someone as controlling as him.
Right. Fun fact, before Drew was even sentenced in the murder of Kathleen, he had fired his lead defense attorney, Joel Brodsky, and with his new defense team, argued for a retrial citing ineffective counsel on the basis that Joel told Drew that if he wanted to testify in his own defense, Joel would walk off the case. In May of 2022, so a year ago, Joel told Chicago's Afternoon News on 720 WGN that he knows where Stacy Peterson is and is thinking about coming forward with the information, saying, quote unquote, "I'm not going to say I know where a body is, but I know where she is." He followed that up with, "There's no blue barrel."
Oh, damn. Why wouldn't he tell them? What has he got to lose now?
Okay, well, he then went on to say, "It's something that weighs on my conscience. I would never do anything that would hurt a former client, but he's in prison. He's never getting out. So if he's a man, he'd say, I'm done here. I'm done. Here's what happened." So people can have closure, meaning so Stacy's family can have closure. They still don't have her. And then he says, "I know everything about both of his wives. I feel bad about Drew still not taking responsibility and Stacy still being missing. I'm thinking about maybe revealing what happened to Stacy and where she is."
Kind of sounds like a book deal.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm so glad you said that.
I mean, come on.
I know.
I mean, really, obviously that's, yes, he should do that. Because I couldn't live with myself. I really couldn't. No. That's why I couldn't be a criminal defense attorney. No. God bless him. I mean, I'm glad there are because we need them.
Right.
But you're going to have a lot of crap on your shoulders that you have to keep.
Within days, Joel Brodsky was in court and slapped with a gag order. The judge said, "This may be the most vile crime in the U.S., but defendants still have a right to speak in confidence with their attorney." Attorney-client privilege. So that gag order is still in place today. Now, what happens when a person violates a gag order? Because I'm hoping he's going to violate this gag order.
Right.
The consequences may include a more stringent order, a fine for disobeying the order, or even imprisonment. But I'm sure he's busy writing a book or working on a podcast.
He's not going to get imprisonment. He'll just be disbarred and a bunch of other stuff, probably a fine.
He's done being an attorney anyway, so I don't know what's holding him up. I think he's waiting for money. I think he's waiting for that sweet deal.
If it led to the whole story coming out accurately and he knows where the body is, I'm guessing they would let the whole like imprisonment for breaking attorney-client privilege. I think they'd let that go. There's no way they would do that. Why? Who cares?
And was Joel the only person that Drew told? He had two other defense attorneys. So did he just choose Joel to tell this to, or do the other two know as well? That's my question. Another fun fact. While Drew was married to his second wife, she was in a really bad car accident, but survived. It is believed that Drew had tampered with the brakes on her car.
Oh, jeez.
In hopes that she would lose control and die in a vehicle accident. It's never been proven, though. Just hearsay.
So he kind of gets off. I mean, we're assuming this is true. He kind of gets off on picking a woman, doing all the life stuff with her, and then offing her, and then doing it again. It's that initial excitement, right? The honeymoon mm-hmm. period.
He thrives in a honeymoon
right?
period.
Right? As soon as the honeymoon period's over, mm-hmm. he also thrives on the fact that he believes he has ultimate control, being in law enforcement and his own crazy head. And he knows he's so much smarter than anyone else. Like, he's just super smart, and he knows he can get away with it.
He's kind of a narcissist.
100%, yeah. So he gets off on that.
And every time he remarried, it was somebody younger. So each time they got younger and younger and younger, as he's getting older and older older. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Wild, right?
A little bit.
All right, so what did you think of my case?
Well, to start off with, I think the only thing that Drew's getting off on now is someone named the Beast in prison. But it's just crazy because I don't know what I would do if I were one of these women. Mm. Because you know in the back of your mind, he won't give up and he'll come find you. So even if you leave him, he's going to come hunt you down and it's going to be bad.
Mm-hmm. The other two women that he divorced, the first wife and the second wife, I believe that they didn't ask for any money. The only one that asked for money was Kathleen.
So they knew. They're like, this guy's off. I need to just get out with my life.
In each marriage, he got a little bit more possessive, a little bit more controlling, sure. a little bit more physical in each marriage.
Because he's approaching his midlife crisis. His midlife crisis was Stacy. Right?
That's
she
true.
Was his red Ferrari.
And according to other sources, he was also cheating on Stacy.
Oh, God.
I know.
See, this is what pisses me off.
Once they had their second kid, it's like he was done.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And Stacy went and had all this work done. She was gorgeous. And she went and had all this work done, and it still wasn't good enough for him.
See, if you had all that work done, there's no way I would leave you.
Oh, my gosh. If you went and had all that work done, there's no way I would leave you.
Right?
Yeah, no, I don't want you to get boobs.
Breast implants.
We're so dysfunctional.
I don't know.
That's a crazy one, right?
You know what there needs to be? I'm just speaking stupid here, but it doesn't matter.
Speaking stupid. That should be a segment of our show.
Yeah, here's Speaking Stupid by Daniel. Okay. Ready? In a world that's hyper, like, social media, technology-driven, right, mm-hmm. instant information age, we need to have a database where you can enter in as, like, a spouse and you're leaving someone. You enter in information about your prior. And then someone goes to date him. Is like, oh, hold on. Let me pull you up on Daniel's stupid information database and see what I can find out about you and see what your priors have said. Because if your wife
That's
number
four. That's a great
four,
idea.
Yeah. If your wife number four, there's a reason why your wife number four, right?
It's not because he loves you more.
No.
It's because your wife number four.
Because your wife number four. So, you know, yeah, people make mistakes, but three times, something's probably wrong.
I had a woman that I worked with a really long time ago, and she was wife number four, and her husband married each of his mistresses. She was mistress number four.
Statistically, I think I've read this as a factoid.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that marrying mistresses works out, because then it's no longer exciting. I get it.
Right.
Right? You leave your boring wife. And you find this young, hot thing that for some weird reason is into you, right?
Right. She's going to bang you in a car.
Yeah.
She's going to bang you in the basement of your home when your
right, but once
other
you're,
family's upstairs.
Once you're married, you're not going to go do that stuff anymore. You just aren't.
Ugh.
Right?
Yeah. Man, we're boring.
I mean, it, pretty soon it's like, why? I don't want to come over onto that side of the bed. That's too much work. Do we have to do that?
Can we do the fast version?
Can we just get this over with? I'm tired.
Oh my gosh. Too much information.
Right? So, yeah.
Anyway. No, I get
so
it.
We need it. We need a Daniel's Stupid Database for priors.
All right. Let's do it.
All right.
My sources for this case were, of course, a ton of articles, an episode of How It Really Happened, which is my new favorite show to watch, Drew's Appeal Records, a book titled Fatal Vows, The Tragic Wives of Sergeant Drew Peterson by Joseph Hosey, and another book called Drew Peterson, The Tribune Files. Now, I'm going to read about this book because I thought it was really interesting, and I got a lot of information from this specific book. This book was created using articles published in the Chicago Tribune over the past 7 years. The editors have carefully chosen from the Tribune's rich archive of material on Peterson and edited it, that's a tongue tie, to present the story of the former Bolingbrook police sergeant and his trial in book format.
Wow.
It was really cool to read this.
I bet.
Yeah. I actually found it after I had started reading The Fatal Vows, and I skimmed through the rest of Fatal Vows and really focused on this book. So there's also a TV movie called Drew Peterson, Untouchable, that I have not had the pleasure of watching yet, but it stars Rob Lowe as Drew Peterson.
Oh, okay. All right, that
and
changes
it was like
everything.
In 2012.
If Drew Peterson was Rob Lowe,
he's just, not.
No. But if he was, then I could see where he's.
This is Drew Peterson.
Oh God! Seriously?
Seriously? Yes.
Okay, there's something wrong with these women.
Well, I think he just offered them something they needed.
He looks sinister.
He is. He's evil. Look at him smiling with those dumb glasses on. Okay, I'm going to post these pictures.
What do these hot women want with that guy? He
a mustache ride?
Is he, right?
I don't know.
You think he takes pills or what?
A
I mean,
blue
he's kind of old, right? I don't know.
He's old.
So 20, 30, they're going to have more energy, but he ain't.
I don't know.
Not without help.
He had something going on, I guess. All right. We got some Patreons to thank.
A special shout out and thank you to Michelle F. Thanks, Michelle. And Aubrey C. Thank you, Aubrey. Melissa H. Wait, is this you?
No, it's not me.
Oh, okay.
It's a different Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa H.
Thank
you guys,
you guys
are awesome.
So much. We really, really appreciate you and all of you that have signed up for Patreon. We have like 30 or 40 extra episodes, I think.
Yeah.
In there, something like that. So if you need more of us, if you need more of this dysfunction, go check us out at Patreon.
Yeah. And we are a little behind, which again is my fault because of.
No,
really
we're not
been...
behind anymore.
Okay. Well, anyway. So we are going to be recording more stuff and putting stuff on there since I'm not as absent.
And it's fun. It's really fun over there. And we are on Instagram, if you're interested. It's Till Death Do Us Part podcast. And shout us out. Leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify. That would be great.
Help us be popular.
Not too popular.
No.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I hope you enjoyed this case. So be careful.
For marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always the better option.
Guess so.
Bye.
Bye.